Rhythm and Blues Experience. Right here on KBOO 90.7 FM. From 12 o'clock noon to 8 p.m., with JJ leading us off from 12 noon to 2 o'clock. Followed by Sequoyna Wright from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock p.m. Followed by yours truly, Shahid, from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. And Reggae Bob taking us home from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. From the old to the new. Just for you, a very special Memorial Day Soul and Rhythm and Blues experience. Monday, May the 26th, 12 noon to 8 p.m. Right here on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM. And online, www.kboo.fm radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 14th Annual Village Building Convergence from Friday, May 23rd to Sunday, June 1st. The Village Building Convergence is a 10-day placemaking and urban permaculture festival that leaves a permanent, sustainable impact all across the city as an expression of what communities all across the city are ready to do in their own places. The VBC brings together a vast spectrum of related initiatives, such as community currency, grassroots democracy, ecological design, youth engagement, social justice in action, ecological stewardship, multimodal transportation, and so much more. This year's evening speakers and performers will be at the Sunnyside Methodist Church, 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. A list of speakers and more information about the Village Building Convergence in general can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look this beautiful spring morning here in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Linda Olson Osterlund. I want to thank all of you that supported KBOO during our recent membership drive. If you meant to and you didn't quite get there, please go to our homepage at kboo.fm and look for the words donate today, or you can call our front desk 503-232-8032 and become a member that way. I want to thank all of you who have done that already and invite you to continue doing that. It always makes a difference for keeping community radio, independent, non-corporate KBOO going. And thanks again. But let's get to today's topic. Our topic today is the Guantanamo Bay prison camp, or as I call it, that hellhole off our southern coast. Tomorrow, May 23rd, is exactly 1 year since President Obama gave a major speech on national security in which he promised to resume releases from that place. While there have been some releases, the progress has been slow, and in some ways the conditions at the camp have actually gotten worse. As a result, organizations from across the globe, including here in Portland, have joined together to declare May 23rd a global day of action to close Guantanamo and end indefinite detention. And to tell us all about these planned actions and to bring us up to date on all matters Guantanamo is joining us from London is Andy Worthington. He's a journalist, photographer, and the author of The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison. He's also one of the speakers at the London event tomorrow, May 23rd. Welcome to KBOO again, Andy.
Hello, Linda. It's always nice to be talking to you. Thanks for asking me.
I'm so glad you could join us. So let's get started. It's been 1 year since Obama's speech when he promised to increase the releases. Talk about what's happened with prisoners being released from Guantanamo in this last year.
Well, you know, what happened was that last year the prisoners went on a huge hunger strike in despair at ever being released, because over half of them have been cleared for release for many years by a task force that President Obama appointed when he took office. But they've not been released, you know, because of Congress raising obstructions to their release, making it very difficult to do that, and because, frankly, the president didn't have the will to overcome Congress. He actually had a waiver in the legislation that allowed him to, but he chose not to use it. He chose political pragmatism rather than doing what was needed. So the men were stuck. They were in despair. And as a result of this hunger strike, which, you know, the world's media picked up on, President Obama had to make a speech in which he had to be seen to be doing something. So he promised that he would resume releasing prisoners from Guantanamo. He promised to appoint two envoys to help with the closure of the prison, one in the Pentagon and one in the State Department. And he appointed those men. And there has been, as you mentioned in your introduction, Linda, some progress in that since he made that speech and appointed the envoys, 12 men have been released from Guantanamo. Now, that's progress because in the almost 3 years before, it was just 5 men who were released after Congress kind of put the screws on. So, but that's all. And you know, we have 154 men in Guantanamo still, and over half of those men, in fact, exactly half of those men, have been cleared for release. So we have 75 of these men who've been waiting since they were told in January 2010 that the task force had decided that the U.S. wasn't in the interest of the U.S. to carry on holding them or to put them on trial. And 2 more men in the last year have joined this queue of people. They were people who were designated for indefinite detention specifically by the task force. But to sweeten that bitter pill, the president, when he issued an executive order authorizing their indefinite detention, said that there would be periodic reviews of the men's cases. It took nearly 3 years for those to start. But in the last few months, a couple of the men's cases have been reviewed, and the high-level review boards have said that they don't want to hold them. But all that's happened is these men have joined the queue of other men, as I say, who are waiting to leave. So there are 77 men in total now, and 57 of those men are Yemenis. The big stumbling block is the Yemenis.
And
sorry,
you,
Linda.
Well, I know you have said in your writing very eloquently that, you know, it's a particular kind of torture to tell a man, well, we now agree you have not committed any crimes and you should be released. We will release you and send you home, and then to just not do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an extra twist that dictatorships wouldn't do. When they throw you away and throw away the key, they don't say, hey, we're going to have a review process and to find out whether we're going to carry on holding you or not, and then have the review process and then not release them when a review board says that they should be released. It's just cruel, frankly.
And we know that there are at least some offers to take those prisoners who may not be safe if they return to their home country. I believe Uruguay, the president of Uruguay, has offered to take 6 people into Uruguay. But he said, you know, hurry up. I'm only, you know, in charge for a little while longer. And so far there has been no movement on that. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. I mean, I would be very surprised, Linda, if talks are not taking place with the envoys to try and secure the release of these men. I mean, interestingly, the Uruguayan president has offered to give new homes to 6 men who can't be sent home safely. And one of those men is a man called Abu Wail Diab, who's a Syrian. There are 4 Syrians out of the 6. Obviously, Syria is not in a fit state for people to be sent back there at the present time. But this man, Abu Wail Diab, was cleared for release by the task force back in 2009. He's been in a hunger strike since last year because he's just despairing about ever being released. And he recently won a rather spectacular victory in the district court in Washington, D.C. last Friday. One of his lawyers had found out through pressurizing the Justice Department that they had been keeping videos of his force feeding and of him being forcibly removed from his cell by the riot squad in Guantanamo. And so they immediately submitted a motion to the court to call for the preservation of these documents and also to call for his force feeding to be brought to an end. And the judge has suspended, has told the government to stop force feeding him and to produce the evidence. Now, this is a man who, you know, like, as I say, has been cleared for release. We have the Uruguayan president saying that he wants to take him. It seems to me that it would be very sensible for the Obama administration to get that man out of Guantanamo now and to take up the Uruguayan president's offer for these other men as well.
Well, and let's talk about the ruling that Judge Kessler did. She had heard this case before and turned it down. Explain what changed about why she now felt that she could order the force feeding to stop. And she also went further and an additional part of the ruling, I believe, said that they could no longer put a stay on all violent cell extractions of hunger strikers.
Yeah, well, you know, what happened last summer is that Judge Kessler and another judge were reviewing cases brought by a number of prisoners about their force feeding and saying, you know, please help us, tell the government to stop force feeding us. And the judge is looking at prior rulings based around, you know, basically based around the U.S. government trying to make sure that judges were not in a position to intervene and to tell them how to treat prisoners at Guantanamo in any way, took that at face value and said, you know, I can't do anything about this. You know, she was sympathetic, obviously. She said, you know, I understand what he's saying about the brutality of his treatment, which, you know, which may be tantamount to torture and is certainly abusive. But I can't do anything about it, though, although there is a man who can. And she pointedly mentioned that President Obama could do something about it. But the prisoners then appealed. And in the D.C. Circuit Court, the Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C., in February, the judges there reversed that ruling and said, no, actually, the prisoners do have the right, as part of their habeas rights, to talk about, to ask, to question, to demand changes to the conditions of their confinement, the way that they're treated. And it's as a response to that that we've had these latest legal challenges, and we've had Judge Kessler, as you say, put in that position where now she is able to do something about it.
Well, and she gives a lot of credence. She spoke about the briefs that were submitted that gave very strong evidence that force feeding at all is in contravention of international conventions on the treatment of prisoners. And so she seems to be very clear that what we're doing there is wrong, and working forward now that she has the opportunity. Is that the impression you get?
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the practical problem with opposing the use of force feeding is that the authorities then turn around and say, you know, we're really not in a position to let people die through refusing food because, you know, that would look bad, as though everything else that's happening wouldn't look bad.
Exactly.
You know, what really gets me about this is that the power is in the president's hands to do something about it in the cases of these men. Certainly when you have a man who is only on a hunger strike and being force-fed because he's in despair about being released despite being told over 4 years ago that the U.S. didn't want to hold him, surely the thing that must be possible is for the president to find a way of dealing with this by sending him.
Exactly, and especially when foreign countries are literally offering.
Exactly,
I want to let the audience know that this is Linda Olson-Osterlund for KBOO and on A Deeper Look, and I'm speaking with Andy Worthington, the author of The Guantanamo Files. Do check out his website, andyworthington.co.uk. If there's anything you want to find out about what's been going on in Guantanamo for all these years, you can find it on that site and really easily. You know, in terms of Judge Kessler's decision, I wanted to bring up a letter that you published on your website from a man named Imad Hassan. He is a Yemeni, I believe, and he's a long-term hunger striker. He has not ever been charged with or convicted. He's released. I mean, he's cleared for release. And in this letter, I did link to it on our website at kboo.fm under A Deeper Look. You can find it there, the links from the schedule. But he wrote a really moving and really disturbing letter about the treatment of the hunger strikers. He describes one man who's down to 80 pounds who will have as many as 6 or 8 armored guards come into his cell to extract him, to force him to accept force feeding. This man is 80 pounds with a broken arm, and how they justify the need of all of those guards to get him to be eating. He also describes that if you are not compliant with the feeding, a nurse will do something like put the feeding tube in without regard to your comfort and then start forcing the food through so fast you're vomiting. He has seen people vomiting continually onto the chair while they're being force-fed so fast that their body can't even intake it. Clearly, these people are being tortured ongoingly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the shocking thing is always, you know, whether it's 80 pounds or some other terribly low weight like that, you know, the authorities at Guantanamo are very lucky that no one has ever sneaked a photograph of one of these people out of the prison because, you know, they would look like the survivors of Belsen.
Auschwitz,
you know, they would look like what was found at the end of the Second World War in the Nazi concentration camps. These are grown men who weigh as much as a fairly small child. And it's disgusting that this is carrying on. It really is disgusting. This shouldn't be happening to anybody under any circumstances, Linda, obviously. But when these are men who are either calling for justice or are calling for being released because they were told they were going to be released, you know, I don't see how it gets much worse than that, frankly.
And over the last year, isn't it accurate that you hear this from attorneys as well? And what I've read is that they're making it harder and harder for the prisoners to be able to interact with their attorneys. They're also, the government has moved to not releasing any numbers of how many are on hunger strike and what's going on. So can you talk a little bit about that, about how there's a tightening down of the conditions there?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, one of the things that happened definitely is that they, under the pretext of needing to search people because of them hiding contraband and all kinds of stories like this, they've been
as if they have contact with anyone off the prison anyway.
Right. No. I mean, absolutely. I mean, how is anything possible? But anyway, you know, what they're saying this is the case, and as a result, they're doing these intensively, awful searches of people. So these are people with sensibilities about being touched, and they're having their genitals groped. And what it has done is stop a large number of the prisoners from having phone calls with their lawyers or from meeting them because they can't face going through this. Well, what a surprise that this is what the authorities have done, because at this point last year, Linda, before this came in, what was happening is that quite a lot of the prisoners were talking regularly to their lawyers. Their lawyers were going through the process of getting this information declassified, which everybody has to do. You can't repeat a word that a prisoner says to you as a lawyer without getting it cleared by the Pentagon censorship team. But a lot of stuff was being cleared, and a lot of stories were coming out, which was part of the reason why the pressure was on President Obama last year. So, you know, they've managed to silence people. And then as you also say, I think it was in December when they stopped reporting on how many people were actually on a hunger strike, because they'd been reporting that all of last year. So there's now silence on that front as well. And it's clear that they're doing whatever they can to clamp down on any information being provided. And what we're getting every now and then are stories like the reports from Imad Hassan that you spoke about, which are very disturbing. But I have to say as well that unfortunately, last year when the mainstream media were really picking up on these stories, that's not happening this year. There are a few places. I'm somebody who's reporting them. We're reporting stories that sometimes I think are very important, very harrowing, but they're not making it into the mainstream media at all.
Yes, one of the stories I heard I think did make it to an article in the New York Times, which was during April. No, that was April a year ago. I'm sorry, I'd pulled up some old information. So no, I'm not getting current information on the conditions. Now, I know that they have, after the Red Cross visited last year, immediately after they visited, they staged a raid on all the common areas and were very brutal, bringing in armored guards and getting in what they called fights with these men who are completely unarmed and weak in state. And five of the prisoners were injured, none of the guards, of course. So
yeah.
We know that there is the possibility of violence at any time, and even the possibility of just these violations of religious beliefs, such as them searching the individual's Quran. Some people have actually chosen not to have a Quran because they must have it searched by the guards regularly. And as you said, some prisoners have stopped seeing their attorneys because it doesn't believe it does them any good. And every time they go, they have to endure these horrible searches. So we've got a really, really difficult situation. And we as Americans need to know that we're the ones responsible. I know that I, of course, don't choose it to happen. And most of my listeners wouldn't choose this to happen. But there are actions that can be taken. And we will be letting people know about that. So this is probably a good time to talk about the global day of action to close Guantanamo and end indefinite detention. Why don't you talk a little bit about this event, these events? To me, it's heartening because it seems like there's more of them this year. Is that what you noticed? I've got a long list of cities in the United States and about eight other in other countries.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, Linda. And I think, you know, it's a sign that, you know, what happened last year has not been forgotten. Because, you know, frankly, those of us who've been working for years to try and get Guantanamo closed, to release these men or for them to be given something that we recognize as justice, and to get the actual prison closed. You know, we were, everybody was tired of the struggling endlessly to do this and hitting a brick wall. You know, Congress was being difficult, and the president was choosing not to make it a priority, and nothing was happening. And the prisoners really brought their story back into the public eye last year, and I think a lot of people have remembered. Then they have carried on wanting to do something about it. And the message really is, you know, as far as the steps that we can take, you know, obviously everybody who looks at Guantanamo objectively and sees what's happening there ought to be appalled that indefinite detention without charge or trial is happening, that it has, you know, become American policy at Guantanamo. And that's not something that any civilized country should be doing at all. But practically, how are we going to get towards the position of closing it is that, first of all, the president needs to release all these people that, you know, his task force and recently the Periodic Review Board have said they don't want to hold. And that's something that I think people have grabbed hold of. They've got hold of those statistics. They understand how wrong it is. And I think the really big message for tomorrow that people need to do, and I do encourage people to call the White House. I don't know whether you've got the screen.
You know,
there.
I've got the numbers right here.
Phone numbers.
Why don't I go ahead and give them after you're through saying what you're going to say?
I mean, and you could also go to the White House website and leave a message there. But just to say to President Obama, you know, we're watching. We're glad that you made a start, but you really have got to break through this deadlock and release the Yemenis. Because the problem with the Yemenis is that the U.S. government, the U.S. establishment in its entirety, it seems, is worried about the security situation in Yemen. So men who have been cleared for release are not being sent home because of fears about the security situation in Yemen. And I'm sorry, it is worse for the United States to be holding people that it says it doesn't want to hold than it is to send them home.
Well, and this is all a self-fulfilling prophecy, because from my observation, and I've been watching Yemen for the last several years and covered it off and on throughout those years, is that it's only grown more difficult in Yemen because of the U.S. direct involvement in that country. I know we've sent another 50 troops of whatever we call them, special forces, but the ongoing drone attacks, those are not welcomed by the mainstream people of Yemeni. And just like all around the world, that drives people to fight against the United States.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely it does, Linda. And, you know, and it's pretty disgraceful how clear that is once you do step back and analyze it. But, you know, for the individual stories of these are people who the United States said, you know, didn't constitute a significant enough security threat to want to hold them. And yet now, because of the security threat, they can't send them home. You know, Guantanamo, the message that's being sent out to the world by the United States government is that Guantanamo, to get out of Guantanamo requires one hurdle after another. If this happened with the United States prison system, nobody would ever be set free for any reason.
Though you know the treatment that they're receiving with those IRF teams and the invasive searches, Albert Woodfox, one of the Angola Three, the last one to be still in solitary confinement, it's been over 42 years now, and he faces exactly the same thing. When our government wants to get angry and revengeful against people, it manages it one way or another. He has been until he got, I believe, a stay on it, facing strip searches every time he left his cell, even just for the small area where he could exercise or to meet with his attorneys. Body cavity searches every single time, and the worst of treatment. And this is a man whose crimes have been overturned and by court after court three times.
No, absolutely. And I mean, and he's just one of the better-known examples, but I know that across the United States, the kind of abuse that people are subjected to in prison,
it's shocking, and to some degree, Guantanamo has helped us face up to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they echo each other. I think if you look at the domestic prison situation and the extreme use of isolation, it has echoes of Guantanamo. You look at Guantanamo, it has echoes of the domestic prison system, and clearly they're both things that decent American people should be trying to do something about. They're such awful crimes against humanity, I believe, that the use of isolation, the various forms of torture, the indefinite detention without charge or trial, they're things that people, if they care about, really need to make some gesture. And tomorrow on Guantanamo is a great opportunity for people to make a call.
Yeah, to take action. So let me give people the information about here in Portland. There is going to be an action here in Portland. I had contact from the people just this morning. They're very excited that it's going to be announced. It's going to be at 12 noon at Director's Park, which is Southwest Yamhill and Park. And please come, bring your signs, bring your voices, bring your energy to want to make this stop. Some of those who are going to be moving towards that demonstration are going to be wearing orange jumpsuits and getting on a variety of buses downtown to bring a visual image to people who might not know about the Global Day of Action and might not be thinking about Guantanamo. So that's certainly one way all of you listeners who are here in the Portland metro area can participate. Once again, that's 12 noon, Director's Park, Southwest Yamhill and Park Avenues in downtown Portland. There's also going to be activities. I was amazed. I mean, it's Amherst, Baltimore, Chicago, and I'm skipping towns with names. Memphis, Honolulu, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Montclair, New Jersey, New Haven, Tucson, Arizona, Toledo, Ohio, Springfield, Massachusetts, and more than those, as many of other towns as I've just named, are all having actions tomorrow here in the United States. And around the country, around the world, we're seeing Munich, Germany, Sydney, Australia, Toronto, Canada, and London, England, as well as other cities. I personally find that heartening, and I do believe that when people come together in one move, in one time, you can make a difference. You can make a difference by going on and signing petitions, and if you can't get down to the demonstration, you can make a difference by calling the White House. Let me give you that number now, and I will put it at the front desk here at KBOO later, so that if you don't have a chance to write it down, but here's the number to the White House, 202-456-1111 or 202-456-1414. I hear that music coming up, and that means that we've run out of time again, Andy. We never have enough time.
Well, no, but it's it's always wonderful to get half an hour with you to talk about these things, Linda. I always appreciate it.
And thank you so much. And I once again want to tell people, go to andyworthington.co.uk. Scrolling down that home page are stories galore. And you can just go, right from the first on back and through the archives and learn as much as you would want to about Guantanamo. It brings it home in a special way. I want to thank all of you for listening. Thank Andy Worthington for joining us today from London, and thank our engineer Rock for helping us with all of that.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. 2 minutes before 10 o'clock. No, make that 1 minute before 10 o'clock. It's KBOO Portland. Air Cascadia is off today. We'll be heading straight into Flashpoints, which today features a new speech by American linguist, philosopher, political commentator, and activist Noam Chomsky. At 11 today, Sarika Mehta hosts Between the Covers. Her guest today is Julia Cook, author of The Other Side of Paradise, Life in the New Cuba. And at 11:30, The Film Show welcomes Dario Van Vrie, founder of the Netherlands Click Animation Festival, which is currently on a tour of the West Coast. Also joining us are young filmmakers from Free Arts Northwest, as well as Hannah Piper Burns and Benjamin Pop of the Experimental Film Festival. But up next, it is Flashpoints. That's coming up next on KBOO. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent spring membership drive. If you missed it, you can still join or renew by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
Native American Business Network is holding its 12th annual Trading at the River Conference and Native Marketplace at Lewis and Clark College, May 27th through the 29th. ONABEN is a nonprofit public benefit corporation created by Northwest Tribes to increase the success of private businesses owned by Native Americans. Trading at the River features inspirational speakers, informative panels, and valuable workshops for small business owners and economic development organizations. ONABEN also welcomes community members to come check out the Native Marketplace, a highlight of the event, which features over 20 Native vendors. It is open to the public from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., May 29th at Lewis and Clark College at Smith Hall. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found on kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Flashpoints, a new speech by Noam Chomsky, and a special report from Alejandro Reyes on the ongoing government attacks in Chiapas. I'm Dennis Bernstein.